Welcome to Product Brand Management, Chapter 10. Today we'll talk about culture and brand, the integration. Let's look at the objective for today's session. The objective is to understand brands in the context of culture. To be able to understand this well, we first need to understand what culture really means. So let's go through a few definitions of what culture is. Culture is referred to as the special intellectual or artistic endeavors of a product. It is a complex whole which actually includes a lot of things. It includes knowledge, belief, art, morals, laws, customs, any of these habits, any of these capabilities that have been acquired by a certain group of people, certain members of society over a period of time. So for example, there are a lot of times if you go to some city that has been in prevalence since the medieval times, there are times when you go to it and say, my God, this place has a lot of culture. There are times when you go to an old palace or a museum and you say, I got some culture. You go to an opera and you say, I got some culture. Now, all these things are a combination of this complex whole. You know, it includes knowledge, it includes art. All these things come together and form culture. Another definition of culture given by Krober and Kluckhohn is that culture consists of patterns, both explicit and implicit, of and for behavior acquired and transmitted by symbols, constituting the distinctive achievements of human groups, including their embodiment in artifacts. The essential core of culture consists of traditional ideas and especially their attracted values. Another definition of culture has been given by Krober and Kluckhohn. According to them, culture consists of patterns, both explicit and implicit, of and for behavior acquired and transmitted by symbols, constituting the distinctive achievements of human groups, including embodiment in artifacts, for instance, or the essential core of culture really consists of traditional ideas, okay, especially their attached values. Culture systems may, on one hand, be confused as products of action, on the other hand, as conditional elements of future action. That's what they're talking about. Now, let's examine this definition for a little bit. Culture consists of patterns, both explicit and implicit, of and for behavior. So basically, behavioral patterns that are both explicitly visible or implicit to a certain society. These behavioral patterns, acquired by a certain society or members of a certain society over a period of time, becomes culture. Now, the embodiment of such behavior in say artifacts, for instance, that is also culture. Attached values. Culture systems may, on one hand, be considered as the products of action. So, if, for example, there is a society, for instance, let's take the Indian example. In India, there is the behavioral patterns which are explicit is, for instance, respect for your elders. So, whenever we look at an elder, whenever we look at somebody who's our grandfather's age, for instance, we will look at them with respect. We will talk to them with respect. This is an explicit behavioral pattern. This is a part of our culture. Another definition given by Schwartz is that culture consists of the derivatives of or experience, more or less organized, learned or created by individuals of a population, including those images and their interpretations transmitted from past generations, from contemporaries, or formed by individuals themselves. Now, derivatives of experience. Now, these can be organized or not organized, learned or created, but derivatives of experience that have been passed down by individuals of a population to the society as a whole also becomes culture. Let's look at a couple of other definitions. Hofstede says, culture is the collective programming of the mind which distinguishes the members of one group or category of people from another. So, for instance, if we have the Indian culture versus the culture in, say, the UK, now these two cultures are very distinctive. They're distinctive because it really distinguishes the members of the Indian society versus the members of the British society. Now, how are these distinctions born? They're born because of those behavioral patterns that are explicit or implicit that have been passed down through generations. There are concepts like power distance, which we'll talk about later. And there's so many other concepts which really tell you that, okay, this person is from this country or this culture, and this other person belongs to some other country or some other culture. According to Matsumoto, culture is the set of attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors shared by a group of people, but different for each individual, communicated from one generation to the next. Now, again, whether you look at behavioral patterns passed down through the generations, or you look at collective programming of the mind, now all of these basically led to a set of attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors that are shared by a group of people. They can be different for each individual, because how I behave with my elders versus how the society as a whole expects me, or society as a whole behaves with their elders, there might be a little difference in that. But the fact is, overall, the pattern will remain more or less similar. Now, this pattern is communicated from one generation to the next, and that becomes culture. Let's look at some of the characteristics of culture. Culture is manifested at different layers of depth. It affects behaviors and interpretations of behaviors. So, for instance, if people from two different cultures are talking to each other, they might not be seeing eye to eye about certain things, and which is what makes international business very challenging. So if I go to Japan for a meeting, for instance, and if I'm expecting the Western style of immediate results, and if I'm expecting the style of being able to talk frankly in a meeting, that doesn't sit very well with them. The Japanese culture is more about respect, it's about patience, it's about sitting down, meditating over the smallest of issues and solving them for a long period of time. On the other hand, culture in the West is very different. The culture in the West says that if there is a problem, we will all get together in a room, we'll brainstorm and we'll hash it out. We'll make sure that we reach a solution in that room itself. And if that requires an argument, for instance, that's also all right. But in Japan, if you get into an argument with somebody while in a meeting, that is considered to be the height of disrespect. Whereas in the US, for instance, a debate or an argument is not considered a sign of disrespect. It's just regular work life. Now, which is why I say the culture really affects behavior and interpretations of behavior. It can be differentiated from universal human nature and unique individual personality. Now, universal human nature may actually have certain patterns of behavior. All over the world, there are people who, everybody, for example, eats, drinks, sleeps. But how they eat, how they drink, how they sleep, how much they sleep, that all is different. What are their habits in the morning? Is that influenced by culture? That is different. Culture influences the actual biological process as well. Some further characteristics of cultures. Culture is associated with social groups. Culture is both an individual and a social construct. Delineation of one's of a culture's features will always be fuzzy. You can never really say that this is our culture, because over a period of time, in every country in the world, there has been immigration, there have been people going out of the country, people coming into the country, there's been imperialism, colonialism. Throughout history, lines have fuzzed out, lines have become a little blurred. So what is our culture today, what is the Indian culture today, for instance, is a mix of cultures from so many lands. It's a mix of even the British culture to some extent. It's a mix of Middle Eastern culture to some extent. But that's what we are today. We've become a melting pot of cultures. Culture is also learned and it's subject to gradual change. So what the Indian culture was 1,000 years ago versus what it is now, they're very different things. But the cultural change has been very gradual. Now, various parts of all culture are to some degree interrelated, and that's because it comes from a way of life. It comes from the way of life of our ancestors, of people who have lived in the country before, who have followed certain patterns of behavior, certain set patterns of behavior. Over a period of time, those patterns of behavior have become our culture. But various parts of culture will typically be interrelated, and that is because they come from a behavioral pattern. Now let's look at brands in the cultural domain. A strong brand integrates its cultural origins and values and cultural adaptations of products and services to local markets make the brands more desirable as it is in sync with the local culture. Now let's examine this for a bit. A few chapters ago we looked at brand identity. We looked at Acres' model of brand identity, in which very clearly when we started mapping identity, there was a parameter called a brand as an organization. Now, within brand as an organization, there was further sub-parameters saying, is it a global organization or is it a local organization? Do we need to place our brand? Do we need to position our brand? Do we need to identify our brand as a local brand or a global brand? A strong brand will always integrate the origins and values that the country of origin brings to its brings to the table. For instance, German brands typically, when you just say that my brand is German, or my car or my engineering product, my product is German, the first things that come to your mind as associations with the word German are that the quality would be great, the engineering will be perfect, probably the manufacturing process for that is followed is all modern, it's all perfect, it's all done in a very systematic way. These are things that you will associate inherently with a German product. Now, it is therefore advantageous for a German brand to say that I am German, because there are some of these associations that are inherent. So they don't have to go about spending money in order to build these associations into the brand. They don't have to say, for example, a Mercedes doesn't need to say that I have great quality, I have great engineering. They don't need to say it. Because it's Mercedes and because it's German, people can just inherently understand that, all right, there can be many other features. Luxury, for instance, is something they need to talk about, but engineering they really don't need to talk about, because it's German, the engineering must be good. Similarly, Japanese, the whole standardization in processes, the whole efficiencies in processes. When something is Japanese, you also know that it has been efficiently produced, and therefore if the cost is lesser, it is actually a function of a more efficient process rather than cost cutting or rather than using cheaper raw materials. They probably use the best raw materials, but because the process is optimized and more efficient, they have cost advantages. Now, these are cultural origins and values that need to be integrated into a brand to make it even stronger. A Japanese brand doesn't need to say that I have a lesser cost because my process of manufacturing is more efficient. It is inherent. Every time I think of a Japanese brand, my first reaction is the process must be efficient, which is why this should be at a very competitive cost. And if they are charging a certain amount of money, it is because they have included more features to it. The second point, cultural adaptations of products and services to local markets make the brands more desirable. It is not just about being desirable, it is also about, it's a necessity. When you in the modern day world, when you enter a new country, and if you're not able to adapt to the local culture, your brand is going to die out. Take McDonald's, for instance. McDonald's came to India, and for the first time in its history, it sold what we call a McAloo Tikki burger. Now, a McAloo Tikki burger is not available anywhere else in the world. But in India, the demand for vegetarian fast food is so much that they had to innovate and come up with new products. They had to come up with a range of products that were completely vegetarian. KFC, for instance, did not catch on to this trend to begin with, and they have an inherent association saying that the name of the company actually is Kentucky Fried Chicken. Now, in a country like India, where half the population is vegetarian and a significant population is pure vegetarian and does not, for example, even like to sit in a place where non-veg food is served, KFC had a very tough time convincing people that you can come in here, come into my shop, come into my store, come into my restaurant, and you can actually get good vegetarian food as well. They spent a significant amount of money after a number of years in the business, and after facing losses and after not growing compared to other QSR chains, they spent a significant amount of money just advertising the fact that they have a line of vegetarian options. And that is how they've actually gotten back into the game. It is therefore very, very important to adapt to the culture that you're going into. There are other aspects to it. We can take the example of a Tata with a JLR. Now, if a Tata has acquired JLR from the UK, but they don't put the name Tata in front of Jaguar. Because if they put the name Tata in front of Jaguar, they will have all the associations that an Indian company will have on top of Jaguar or Land Rover, which are very well known, very well respected British car brands. Now, having an Indian car brand as a part of your identity, if you are a British car brand, is not a great thing, because Indian car brands are not being traditionally known for a lot of great quality cars. On the other, we know in India that we produce great quality cars, but compared to the West, our quality is still lacking. On the other hand, if we have a yoga institute brand, for instance, that having an Indian association will make a huge difference. When we have a yoga institute brand and we take it abroad somewhere, all we need to say is we don't even need to adapt to the culture. We actually take our culture with it, which is actually the first point, strong brand integration. A strong brand integrates its origins and values in it. Some more characteristics of cultures and brands: cultural identity and modernism, consumer behavior, and cultural facts. Now, when you go into a new country, you have to understand that their consumer behavior can be very different from our consumer behavior. So, if an American brand comes to India, they cannot use the same marketing tools that they've used in the US versus in India. And in fact, for instance, there was an example of Coca-Cola. I think Coca-Cola had an advertisement in the Middle East where there were three pictures. In the first picture, a man was lying in a desert, completely parched, clearly very, very thirsty. And in the second picture, he's drinking a Coca-Cola. And in the third picture, he's completely refreshed and he's going about his business. The ad completely flopped in the Middle East. Simply put, the person who made the ad did not realize that in the Middle East, the writing system is different. You actually go from right to left rather than from left to right. So people were looking at the images from the opposite direction. So according to a Middle Eastern person, the first image that they saw was that of a man who's completely refreshed and going about his business. In the second picture, he's drinking a Coca-Cola. And in the third picture, he's lying down parched in the desert. Now let's look at adapting to cultural characteristics in local markets. When you have a brand and you've launched your brand or your company in a new country, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to identify the target consumer. You target the same consumer niche as you do in your home country, but you adapt to local values. You employ the power of power distance. We'll come to these concepts. Enter with low uncertainty and avoidance culture, and then identify whether or not it's collectivist or individualist. Now let's look at these things. For example, if you have a brand like a Mercedes or an Audi or a BMW, these are all high-end luxury brands. The same kind of niche, the upper crest of society that you target in the West, the same kind of niche will be targeted in India as well. So you've identified the target consumer, you're targeting the same consumer niche, but you have to adapt to the local values. You have to communicate to the local consumers how the brand is now relevant to the Indian context. Let's look at the concept of power distance. Now, let's understand what power distance is. Now, in the East and in the Asian countries, as opposed to the West, in the European and the American countries, the difference between the way we deal with people much higher up the hierarchy versus the way they deal with it, there's a big difference in there. So for instance, if you're sitting in the same office, and if I've just joined a company as a fresher, and I'm an executive and I'm talking to the MD of the company, in India, the psychological distance between me and the MD will be huge. On the other hand, in the West, in the US or in the UK or in Western European countries, the distance is not that big. Because the psychological distance is not big, we've been brought up to think that there is a hierarchy. Hierarchical distances mean something. In the West, they don't mean anything. I mean, they do mean that there is a hierarchy, there's a certain protocol to be followed. On the other hand, what it doesn't mean is that you can't argue with your boss, for instance. In the West, it's perfectly okay to get into debates with your bosses, to sit with them as equals and try and understand, try and hash out the situation. In the Indian context or on the Eastern context, in the Asian context, it's not the same thing. There is a lot of distance between the people at the top and the people at the bottom. This distance is called power distance. Now you have to understand the power distance differences in different countries when you're entering a new country. It's important because if I'm an American brand, if I've entered India, I'm also setting up an office in India. The office will have a certain culture. It cannot have the same culture as in the West, as in the US, as in my home country. Okay. The culture has to be a little different because people behave differently. People have been brought up differently. The attitudes to hierarchies are different. The attitudes to work are different. And that is where all this comes in. You have to enter with low uncertainty avoidance culture. Also, you have to identify whether the culture is collectivist or whether it's more individualist. Do people come together and do more stuff, or do people just try and live individual lives? There are places in the West where people don't even know their neighbors. On the other hand, in India, there's a lot of community feeling amongst people who live in the same community or in the same neighborhood. That is a collectivist versus an individualist culture difference. Now let's summarize this session. What is culture? It's a complex whole which includes knowledge, belief, arts, morals, laws, customs, and any other capabilities and habits acquired by man as a member of a certain society. There we studied the characteristics of cultures, we studied the brands and the cultural domains, we studied cultural identity and modernization, and we also studied consumer behavior and cultural facts. Adapting to a cultural characteristics in the local markets, culture is associated with social groups, culture is both an individual and a social construct, and delineation of a culture's features will always be a little fuzzy because of the way the world is these days, with free movement of people's goods and services across the world, across countries. So culture is learned, culture is subject to gradual change, and various parts of culture are to some degree all interrelated. That's the end of the session. Thank you.